Hello, this is KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM on your radio dial. If you want to listen to us online, go to kptz.org. That's our website. You can listen to today's show live, and you can also listen to podcasts of previous shows. Much of the original programming is up as podcasts, so enjoy. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who is that woman making the soft-serve ice cream cones at Aldrich's? Who are those people braving the late summer drizzle to kayak early in the morning? And who is that tattooed kid with the shaved head smoking out behind the boiler room? Do you think those ladies across the way who are knitting, you think they don't notice you? They're watching you, kid. This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with the people who make up the eclectic mix around here. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and teenage beauty queens, lawyers and ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otters, and even the soaring eagles. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people, your neighbors, your friends, and particularly the people you don't know yet but you'd like to meet them. My guest today is someone that everyone wants to know, Michael Evans, Port Townsend's Chief of Police. Welcome to the show, Chief.
Thank you, Marianne. Quite a pleasure to be here.
Let's start from the very beginning. Are you a Port Townsend boy? Were you born and bred here?
I was not. I was actually born in Rochester, New York, and did a brief sprint in New York, then Virginia for a few years, and then moved to Colorado when I was 10 years old in fourth grade and stayed there until 2000 when my wife and I relocated to this beautiful town.
I see. Well, let's back up a second. You know, you moved a bit around when you were a kid. What was your dad doing?
He worked for IBM, which we joked stood for I've Been Moved. It was kind of similar to the people in the military. We got moved quite a bit. However, when my father landed in Boulder, Colorado, he decided that was it. That was nirvana for him, and he no longer wanted to move anywhere else and stayed there.
And so was that an option with IBM? Could you just say, I don't want to move anymore?
I don't know if it was or not, but somehow he wrangled it and was able to pull it off. I think he gave up promotions to stay there, but said the quality of life he had in Boulder was better than getting more money or another job title and moving to a city such as Trenton, New Jersey came up and Sacramento, California, a few places. So we stayed.
So you were an East Coast kid who landed in Colorado at sort of a formative age of 10. What problem did you have integrating? Were you wearing the wrong color socks or anything like that?
I was wearing the wrong color everything. I had the wrong accent. I had the wrong background culture. It was quite a culture shock. The biggest thing was there were no trees, so it took me a while to get used to that. Went from living in a near forest in the back east with the hardwoods and now moving out to the plains. We did have the beautiful Rocky Mountains there in our backyard looking at those. But that was a very tough transition, and also my accent. In fourth grade, my teacher came up from Brooklyn to teach us, and I managed to pick up her Brooklyn accent. So when I moved to Colorado, I was quite the novelty. The teacher would ask me to stand up in front of class and just speak, say anything.
Oh,
I didn't know why at first. They just liked to hear my accent.
And did they snicker and giggle?
They did several things. Snickering and giggling was just some of them, but it was a very interesting time. And then I became a soft talker because I realized people were listening to me, not for what I had to say, but how I sounded in saying it.
Weird. Very weird. Yeah. And so you stumbled through grammar school and went to high school. Now, everyone in high school is labeled as something, whether it's accurate or not. What do you think your peers labeled you as?
I don't know if they ever labeled me as anything. I was fortunate, and I was able to kind of drift in between groups and cliques. I was kind of a laid-back, I guess very nice person, and no one found a threat in me, so they just kind of accepted me. So in that realm, I didn't really belong to any particular group and kind of liked it that way. I was kind of the quiet, shy kid and was more into observing people and their behaviors than actually engaging.
Well, it sounds like fourth and fifth grade were harder for you than high school.
Yes, definitely, at least until I lost my accent enough to where I was no longer asked to speak impromptu in front of people.
Blended in a bit.
Yes.
Okay, now, some teenagers are very focused, and they know I'm going to be X when I grow up. Are you one of those kids?
I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So, I had a vague idea. I wanted to get into federal government working in the international arena. That was kind of something I enjoyed. My family would sit around on the weekends, Friday nights, Saturdays, and discuss international politics. For some reason, it was always international politics, never really local. And I found I had an interest with that, and I would search through newspapers, skipping all the local stuff or the state stuff, and just go straight to the international politics. So for whatever reason, found an interest in that.
Interesting. And did you travel to check out some of these places?
No. Unfortunately, I did not. My father offered me that opportunity in college, but I had a girlfriend at the time, and I thought it was more important that I stay back where I was and not take up that chance.
Young hormones.
Yes.
What can you say about it?
I wish I had it to do over.
Yes, yes. So where did you go to college?
I went to the University of Colorado in Boulder, and my major was political science with an emphasis in international affairs. And then my senior year, East European communism collapsed, the wall came down. And all of a sudden, I was a history major. So I had to look to do something else.
The world keeps changing.
Yes, it does, and not always for the best.
Right. Well, so what did you decide to do?
I decided to go the other extreme. Outside of the international world, I wanted to go more local. I really enjoyed teaching. I wanted to, at some point in my life, teach at the high school level or college level. So I started taking teacher certification courses, and as part of that, I had to volunteer my time with youth somewhere. So I went the non-traditional route. I saw that the local juvenile services, which was run by the courts in Boulder, had an opening for interns from the University of Colorado. So I took that opportunity.
And so what does that mean? What did you actually do?
Started out, we were intake and assessment workers as well as counselors. They trained us to be juvenile counselors. It was a short-term facility, meaning that kids were typically only there for 24 to 48 hours. So they would be brought in after they were newly arrested anywhere in Boulder County. So that would include the county and all the cities, including the city of Boulder. And it was our job to do the intake on them. And that was asking, as I recall, it was 110 question questionnaire. And then we would go off of that for even further details. And then we would bring in the parents or their guardians and question them. So it was quite an intensive process.
Well, you were pretty young at that point, and you're talking mainly teenagers, right?
Yes.
So there wasn't much gap between your age and their age. Did you find it hard to be a figure of authority?
It was a bit of a transition, but I noticed the trends in music and dress and all that had changed quite drastically since I had left high school, so I was out of vogue and out of style, even at the young age of 22 or 21 when I started at the juvenile center. So a little bit of a transition, but not too much. It was a great program. They had great training, and it's just something that I thoroughly enjoyed. I really like working with kids, even in that setting.
And what was the age range of the kids you were dealing with?
Anywhere from 11 on up through 17. Once they hit 18, if they weren't released, they were carted off to the adult jail. And that was kind of interesting. On those days came, a kid would pack up and go over to the adult jail. Some of them were kind of excited to do that. Some of them were scared to death.
Yeah, I can understand that thoroughly. Well, what sort of reasons would the juveniles be brought in there? What were the biggies?
Oh, every reason imaginable. It was a community. It involved the mountains. It had farmland and went up right up to the kind of the Denver metro area. So we would see quite a mix of kids coming in and reasons for that. It was anything from violence in the home, like domestic violence, a kid acting out, hurting a family member, to unfortunately we had sexual assaults where kids were victimizing other kids. Even we had a kid come in on a school shooting, took a gun to school and shot a classmate as he felt that classmate had been bullying him, kind of take revenge. This was before Columbine, so times were a little different then. The school didn't go on lockdown like it did now. Just police showed up, arrested him, and brought him to us. And then we had other kids who came in for homicide, murder.
Wow. Were gangs an issue in Boulder at that time?
Not to the extent it would be in the Denver area, the inner cities, for sure, but we had what we called the wannabe gang members, and sometimes they can act, at least at the street level, worse than the gang members because they're trying to prove themselves or they're really young kids and do some things that are very violent or dangerous, hurt other people, and just have that mindset that they want to be this gang member, what they perceive to be a gang member. At the time, it was the mid-90s, and the street gang thing had become popular in the media, the movies and books, and even though a lot of those tried to portray the gang life as something not ideal and something not to strive for, unfortunately, a lot of the young kids, being impressionable, fell into that and saw it as something that they wanted to do with their life or something to strive for.
So, Chief Evans, you started with the juvenile services while you were still in college, right?
Correct.
And then when you graduated, did you join them full-time?
I did, actually. Just before I graduated, I had one more class to complete, Spanish, and I held that off because foreign language is not something that came easily to me, which was interesting with my international affairs desire. So I completed that, but they had hired me during that semester. So it was a little stressful. I had to make sure I passed. And then started full-time with them, and it very much enjoyed that. Because we were a short-term facility, they didn't really have an education program. We would have supervised time. We have a day room where all the kids would gather in the daytime. And it was just kind of activities or watching TV, just kind of things to take their time, but nothing that really benefited their education. So they have this gap in time that they're with us, and I felt they should continue with their education. So I created a basic education program kind of from the ground up and incorporated that into the facility and really enjoyed that and was very fortunate that they allowed me to do that and gave me the opportunity.
So how long were you with them?
I was there about 5 years, and then I left to go to the adult corrections, the Boulder County Jail. Just at that point, thought I wanted to see what it was like on the other side. So all these kids, when they turned 18, move over there and heard the stories and just thought, well, I'd like to check into that. And at that point, I was also looking at getting into law enforcement, and I thought that would be a good transition.
Okay. And so did you attend the police academy?
I did. While I worked in Colorado, they're private, unlike the state of Washington, so colleges, universities run the police academy. So while I was full-time employed with the juvenile center, my boss allowed me to go half-time for the duration of the academy, which I believe was 15 weeks. So I'd go to the academy from Monday through Friday and then work 10-hour shifts Saturday, Sunday, and also come in on Friday evenings and work some shifts.
Wow.
So for that period, I don't think I really had any days off. It was kind of interesting.
You're pretty busy.
Yes.
So when you graduated from the police academy, did you immediately switch then into another position?
Another position within the juvenile center. I was promoted to supervisor, so I did that for a year, and then after that year was when I transitioned over to adult corrections.
When you're saying adult corrections, does that mean you were actually in the jail full-time?
Yep, I was a Boulder County jail deputy, fully commissioned by the state of Washington as a law enforcement officer, but assigned to be in the jail.
State of Colorado, I believe.
Yes. Did I say Washington?
Yeah,
yes.
It's on your mind now. How long did you do that?
I did that for a year and then realized being locked inside a facility, not being able to go outside, was not something I enjoyed at all. It was a great experience. I met some incredible people in the jail. Some of the smartest people I've ever met in my life were inmates inside the jail. Just some people that got into some things they shouldn't have, or the big one was often substance abuse, people like alcohol or drugs. Took some people that were very successful in life and unfortunately turned them 180 around where they could no longer function in their profession, could no longer function as a father or mother in a family. And that was difficult to see.
Yeah, I think it would be. So the jailer was jailed, and
yes.
You decided you wanted to get out of jail, so where'd you go?
I felt like I was on reverse work release, where work release is inmates sleep at the jail at night, and then they go to their job in the daytime. Mine was a little different. I went to jail in the daytime and went home and slept. Decided I needed to be outside. I love the outdoors on Colorado Front Range. I love the mountains. At the time, I lived in a little town west of Boulder at 9,000 feet, and just really didn't want to spend the beautiful days inside a locked setting. So I transferred over to the patrol division and worked as a Boulder County patrol deputy.
Up in the mountains.
I did. First year was at a little town called Lyons, which was right at the base of the foothills, and then my jurisdiction went up into the mountains, and then I went over to a full-time mountain deputy after that.
That must have been fun.
That was a blast. It was probably the best time of my life, at least career-wise. had 250 square miles of mountains and backcountry all to myself. I worked nights and weekends and just really enjoyed that time.
Wow. Why'd you decide to give that up?
My wife and I both spent most of our life in Colorado. We both were graduates of the University of Colorado. She lived just growing up in high school, and before that, she lived just 7 miles from me, but we never knew each other. We met at the University of Colorado and both decided we wanted to live by the sea. So we looked at the New England states. We still wanted to stay kind of small town, rural. And then we came out here and looked at the Pacific Northwest, and we realized, well, out here you have mountains and sea. We were kind of reluctant to give up our mountains, so we figured this is it.
The best of both.
Yes.
Okay, you're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in beautiful Port Townsend, Washington. This show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Mary Ann McNellis. My guest today is Michael Evans, Port Townsend Chief of Police. The chief has just been talking about how much he loved patrolling in the mountains of Colorado, but he and his wife were ready for the ocean, so they came out west and discovered Port Townsend. How'd you find Port Townsend?
My wife saw it on the internet. The chief was Kristen Anderson at the time. She saw a job opening, and I remember I was actually on patrol in the mountains, and it was one of the few places where I had cell reception. It was pretty late at night, and she called me and said, I think I found a job for you. So I, of course, where? And she said, Port Townsend, Washington. So from that, we went and set up an interview and came out here and fell in love with the town as soon as we drove in. I realized this is it. It doesn't get any better than this. I had a few other interviews at other agencies. I canceled those and said, I'll stay here.
Okay, and what year was that?
That was August of 2000, or summer of 2000 when we came out.
And so you moved lock, stock, and barrel out here?
We did. We rented a moving truck and loaded everything up. At the time, we had a newborn baby. He's probably about a year old. And three large dogs. So it was quite the trek out here.
Yeah, that would have been fun. So you started here, and what were your original assignments?
My original assignment when I came out here was a patrol officer. So I always enjoyed working night shifts, but they rotated me around into day and night shifts. And I did that for about a year, and then the opportunity came up to become a detective. So I applied for that position and got that position and did that for 4 years.
Wow. Well, let's stop a minute here. You said you love night shifts. Most people don't love night shifts in general. What attracts you to that?
Good question. The world is different at night. In the mountains and even here, there's a lot more animals and critters out at night, so I always enjoy seeing those. The work at night is a little better. It's a little more activity going on as far as crimes in progress or being called to crimes that just occurred or in progress. Mm-hmm. Where day shift tends to be a little more people calling to report a crime that already happened. Either they came home and saw that their house had been broken into. So we call it more paper calls on day shift, Where night shift was a little more activity. Of course, you had people were typically more under the influence at night. So you had DUIs and you had issues at bars or people that would get into fights or cause trouble that otherwise normally wouldn't if they were sober in the day hours.
Huh. That's interesting perspective, which reminds me, I've always been curious about this. Do police take, black belt karate lessons or something? How do you handle big old drunks at a bar?
We have what we call force options training. Older terms we used for is defensive tactics training or self-defense training. So that is a requirement at the academy. They have a pretty intensive training program there to teach you how to subdue someone, take someone into custody with minimal injury to yourself, to that person. So a lot of it is control tactics such as joint locks or pressure points to try and get someone into custody that way. Of course, a big one is using your mouth, your verbal skills to try and talk people into custody or talk them into compliance.
Right. Yeah, I can see that would be your first strategy, but sometimes I've witnessed a few things where you might need more than just talking.
Yeah, there are a few times where people, no matter what you have to say or how you say it, they're just not going to listen. And if they're showing violent tendencies or aggression, that's when we call it hands-on, and you have to actually physically take them into custody.
Yeah.
That happens much more at night when people are intoxicated or under the influence of some drug.
So during those first couple of years when you were, on night patrol, is there anything that stands out in your mind that was a sort of weird or interesting story?
Probably a lot. I used to keep a journal because I had so many weird and interesting stories. Just in general, I loved doing traffic stops at night when it was just me and the person I was stopping. especially in the mountains, kind of a isolated, deserted highway, it felt like. It was very surreal. And to be out there and making contact with people, not knowing who this person was, what where they were coming from, where they were going, if they were a threat or a danger, and sometimes met some pretty interesting people doing that. So a bit of adrenaline rush with that. And then just getting the calls at night. You never knew what you were going to. Dispatch would try and give you the best information they could. But there was a lot of holes typically with that information because, of course, they couldn't get everything. Often the caller was frantic and it was difficult communicating. So it was just the attraction is just you don't really know what you're going to, and you have to think fast and prepare yourself.
And then you became a detective. Now, I've seen a lot of detective shows on TV. Everyone has. But what do you really do as a detective? How does it differ?
Well, on TV, they never have bathroom breaks. They never show all the downtime or all the paperwork that we have to do.
That's true.
So detectives, a lot of paperwork, a lot of being in this day and age on the computer, a lot of phone calls. You know, I joke for every hour of work I would put in actually doing an investigation, it felt like I had an hour or more of report writing to do. So a lot of documenting. What a detective mostly does is prepare cases for court, for trial, as well as investigate to find out who the suspect is, and we call it probable cause to arrest them. But it doesn't end after that. On TV, they arrest the person, and it's done. Episode over. Next week, tune in for...
Yeah. A whole different thing.
But here, especially a small town, the prosecutor's office doesn't have their own investigators, so they rely on the police department or the sheriff's office for county cases to continue the investigation. And going to trial, you have to prove something beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right.
So you have to continue your investigation, or you may even, in continuing your investigation, find out that the person you thought committed the crime actually didn't. You may find evidence that that person may not have committed the crime, and of course you would want to follow that and then try and find out the person that did.
Is there any case in particular that you investigated and that you think was wow?
The Aldrich's fire had a bit of a wow factor to it. I don't know anything really at the time. I didn't know anything about arson or that. So I had to rely heavily on arson investigators and the fire department to come in, and it was quite a lot of people. We had people from the federal level, the state level, coming in from other agencies around us locally. I think someone's experience in Seattle and Bainbridge Island in that area. So it was quite a mix, this team of investigators that were pulled together. It was, as I recall, the ATF from the federal level. We had the state investigators in, and then we had the insurance company investigators in, and all very competent, qualified people, but they all at the beginning had a different opinion of how the fire started, so they kind of broke off into camps, so to speak, which was good because we could cover all the angles.
So how did you end up becoming the chief of police in Port Townsend?
I guess I worked up through the ranks. From a detective, I was promoted to sergeant, and I did that for 4 years, and then from sergeant did a stint as kind of administrative work, writing grants, and did that for a couple of years, and then became deputy chief, and that was under Chief Connor Daly, and then on his retirement was appointed chief of police, acting, and then interim.
And then this about April Fool's Day?
The city manager appointed me permanent chief on April Fool's Day, so I always say, if I do something wrong, you come back and say, oh, it was just an April Fool's joke.
April Fool's joke, yes. Okay. So what does a chief of police in a town like this actually do?
Good question. Still trying to figure that out to some extent. No, it's, one, it's a very enjoyable job, especially in a town like this. But a lot of it is I'm kind of get out there and work with our partners in the community. Policing in the past, it kind of used to be police were independent, so to speak, entity. They just were kind of on their own. It can't be that way anymore. We have so many problems that we need to solve on all levels, so we really want to work with our partners in the community, and that would be Jefferson Mental Health, or the mental now Discovery Behavioral Health, the hospital, the fire department, medical providers, and then the schools are a big partner for us, the health department. So a lot of what we see is not just a criminal problem, it's a much broader problem, and we want to kind of go at it from all angles. What's causing the issue? It may have resulted in someone committing a crime. Well, what's the cause of that crime? Can we stop the cause and keep the person out of jail? And we see that a lot with our therapeutic courts, whether it's drug court, mental health court. Those help quite a bit.
Yeah. How many people do you have? How big is the police force here?
We're 15 commissioned officers, and then we have currently two full-time support staff.
Okay. You know, on this drug court and mental health court, I think it, at least in this community, there seems to be a switch in attitude from, you know, lock them up to trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, it's actually national, not just in the communities, which is great, because just locking someone up, one, it's expensive. It's probably the most expensive means of trying to handle an individual, and it doesn't resolve the issue. Now, certainly have people that commit heinous crimes, and they probably should be locked up, and it may not be a mental health or a substance abuse issue, or even if someone goes out and commits a heinous crime while under the influence, that's not an excuse, and they should still have to pay the consequences for that. But what we see a lot of is the more minor crimes, and those come with people that it could be a substance abuse issue. So we see a pattern where they weren't really committing crimes. They were a functioning father or mother. They cared for their children. They were a great person in the community. And then we saw this decline as they started getting into a drug or alcohol took hold of them. And then the behavior started to become criminal. So to put them in jail would keep them away from harming maybe family or other people, but it didn't fix the problem in the long run, and they're not going to stay in jail for the rest of their life. So we need to find a way to help fix them for their life, and that's where the courts come in. So if we can end a substance abuse issue and they can go back to being the fully functioning father, mother, friend, worker, that's what we like to do.
You know, in the last year or two, there have been nationally some really nasty police things, issues, riots, whatever. Fortunately, nothing like that has happened here. But obviously, someone in your position must have to think about it, think about ways to bring the community and the police closer together. What are your thoughts on that?
That's going back to where police departments aren't an entity where they act alone. We don't work in a silo. We shouldn't work in a silo. I think in the past that's been a problem. And I think we've been pretty good here in Port Townsend, certainly before me when Kristen was chief and Connor to become a community policing agency and want to carry on in that. And again, it's so much working with everybody in the community to try and solve the problems and, you know, help the quality of life issues and get people help when they need help.
Yeah, that's very important. Well, believe it or not, we're basically out of time. The time has shot by. I want to thank you for being on the show. This is Mary Ann McNellis, the host of Our Town. I have been talking today with Port Townsend's Chief of Police, Michael Evans, and we've just been discussing sort of the attitudes of the police department and his desire to have Port Townsend's police department work closely with the community, whether it's the schools or community groups. And I think it's safe to say that he's open to talking to you if you have ideas and ways you think that the community and police can be working together more closely. Thank you for being a guest on the show, Chief Evans. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Marianne. It was my honor.
You've been listening to KPTZ, Port Townsend 91.9 FM. The show's called Our Town, so stay tuned to KPTZ 91.9 for more dynamic, eclectic community programming.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Mary Ann McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.